morning. The Conference Committee on Senate File 745, the Omnibus Data Practices Bill, will come to order. Welcome, everyone. We have some time constraints this morning. On the House side, we go in at 9 a.m. It was 10. It was changed to 9. So we're going to have to hustle to get some stuff done this morning. I know that Senator Letts, who's my senator, called me. He's going to be just a few minutes late. So he apologizes, and he'll be here as soon as he can possibly be here. Since yesterday, I think we've kind of crystallized some of the areas that we still have to discuss. And I thought something that we would take up first is something we discussed yesterday. It had to do with MnDOT and a proposed amendment or concept for an amendment. Can everyone hear okay? No? I'm just getting head nods. No. Okay. I'll try to speak loudly, or maybe the mic, I don't know if the mic is on. Or. Okay. Try to talk loud, but let me know if you're not hearing me. So yesterday, in terms of MnDOT, Representative Holberg and I received an email a week and a half ago or so from someone at MnDOT suggesting a way to address some of the concerns that Representative Holberg, at least on the House side, had. I know that Ms. Pontius and Mr. Gehring had taken a look at that language, and my understanding is, and I think we're going to get a copy here soon, of a proposed amendment here that would, oh, it is in the packet, okay, that would track that language. And hopefully members of the public who are here have that as well. Let me just get that out here. Here we go. Okay. I think it's coded as the A9 amendment. Is that right? And Mr. Gehring, do you care to explain that just for the benefit of the public and the members here?
So, Mr. Chair and members, the A9 amendment adds a new section into the conference report, basically, that provides that the data classified as not public, that's in the temporary classification that's currently in effect from the Commissioner of Administration, must be destroyed by July 31st, 2013. This is the data that relates to the mileage-based user fee pilot project. And the concept that's in this A9 amendment is consistent with the emailed language that was distributed yesterday at the committee meeting, but it's coded as a session law and sort of more formalized in this document, but it's the same concept.
Okay. Discussion to this amendment from members? Any discussion? But Mr. Gehring, let me ask you, where on the side-by-side does this properly belong? It's coded to on line 1.3 of the amendment, page 27, after line 11. Is that R27?
So Mr. Chair, on the side-by-side, you'd see it on page R29. It's a little quirky because we're amending the House language in side-by-side comparison. So technically in the House version of the bill it would be page 27, but on the side-by-side it's page R29. And this is a new section, so looking at the side-by-side isn't necessarily helpful.
Okay. Well, let me ask this in terms of the chicken-egg debate here. What portion of the side-by-sides would we need to adopt at the same time we adopt this? In other words, where is this general language?
So Mr. Chair, on page R6 of the side-by-side is the current language that relates to the mileage-based user fee data classification. And I think our recommendation from Ms. Pontius and I would be that if you decide you want to go with the destruction model that we have in the A9 amendment, then you would just adopt the A9, and you wouldn't need to adopt anything that's currently in the side-by-side comparison.
I see. Okay, well, I'll move the amendment then. I'll move the A9 amendment. Discussion to the amendment? Seeing no member comments right now, is there anyone from MnDOT that cares to comment on this? I understand that this language has been shared with the folks at MnDOT. I think we're interested in their assessment. As he's coming up, are folks able to hear me? Is this better? Okay. Go ahead, just introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Peter Zuniga. I'm with MnDOT's Office of Chief Counsel. We are fine with the new proposed language. We would ask, though, that we could include from the House language, lines 6.16 to 6.19. Currently road usage data is classified as not public under a temporary classification. We would like to maintain that data as long as participants' identities are not ascertainable.
Okay. You're talking about on the side-by-side page R6?
Correct, Mr. Chair.
So on the right-hand side, 6.16 through 6.19, you would favor adopting that as part of the conference report?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
We'll work it a little bit.
I don't know if staff care to comment on that, or is that something that will take a little bit more time to harmonize? Mr. Guerin?
Mr. Chair, I think it's workable. Maybe Ms. Pontius and I can confer offline about how to draft it correctly. Because if the conference committee doesn't adopt all of Section 7, then it's a little, this paragraph B would just kind of be hanging by itself, so we need to find out where to put it.
Okay. Well, I think that's something that could be perhaps handled offline and maybe not on the fly, but I've moved the A9 amendment. Any discussion by members on the A9 amendment? Okay, seeing no further discussion, all in favor of adopting the A9 amendment, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, no. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted as part of the conference report. Members, I'd like then, in the meantime, to move on to another issue, and I welcome comments from Senator Dietzick or anyone else about issues that we have yet to cover. But on my list, the next one, in no particular order, but one that came to light, is this Department of Revenue information. And if someone could help me about where that is precisely, side by side, I just don't have my marker here.
Mr. Chair, is that the tax data stuff?
Correct.
It is not in the side by side. It was the amendment, because this is what was, and I'll speak up, this was what was in the Senate tax bill.
That's right.
And then the House was moving separately, and so it's
That's
not
right.
in the side by side.
No wonder. Okay, this is the information I have in front of me here. This language, and I don't know if staff could. Is what I have in front of me suitable for an amendment or for adoption as part of the conference report? Could we just adopt this language? I'm looking at something that's coded in the upper right, RA13-074. I think members have this information, or we did yesterday. Is that suitable for adoption in present form?
Put it in the right place.
Okay. My understanding was, and he can speak for himself, but I think in talking with Representative Lesch, I think this was the piece that had resided in your committee, and there were some reasons why it came there late, but I understand you don't have any objection.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. I don't have an objection.
Okay. Well, then, I will then move that language. And members, I don't know if you have it in front of you. We had it yesterday. Can we get a copy? As I understand it, this is the language that I just described that is in the Senate tax bill, was floating separately as a standalone provision in the House by Tax Chair Lincheski. And I don't think there's any controversy about the language itself, but we did want to respect Representative Lesch if he wanted first to hear it in his committee, but I think he's saying he's okay to adopt it here. So I will move that language, what is before us in the document coded RA13-074. Any discussion to that, members? Doesn't appear to be controversial. It basically says if you're providing stuff to the Department of Revenue, it's going to be private. I think we all agree with that. Okay, I'll move that language. All in favor of adoption of that language, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion prevails. The language is adopted. So that's one issue off the list. Then there was an issue I think we should revisit in the side-by-sides. It was sections 20 and 34 of the Senate language. It had to do with Department of Corrections and Public Defenders language. It was both sections 20 and 34, so that would be pages R17 and R28 both. And this was read in read together. What it would do, my understanding is, would provide certain access to data, Department of Corrections data, for public defenders. And not to put him on the spot, but Representative Lesch, I think some of us are and have been looking to you on this. Could you explain that and explain what you think ought to be done here, adoption or not adoption?
Well, Mr. Chair, my question was, I understand that the county attorneys were here or wanted to be heard on this. And if that's the case, I do have some questions for them regarding the objection to the provision.
Is there anyone here from the county attorneys or from law enforcement?
Well, that being the case, Mr. Chair, I don't understand the county attorney's objection to this. Is there anyone, first of all, can you ask if there's anyone from the public defenders here,
yeah.
Mr. Chair?
Anyone from the public defenders?
Okay. Well, we heard from Mr. Sikora yesterday, and I've heard everything he has to say, Mr. Chair, and I get that. What I don't understand is the objection from the county attorneys, because frankly, if I don't have to go to a separate agency and get additional information just to turn it over to you, public defender, as far as I'm concerned, it's doing me as a prosecutor a favor. So without some kind of explanation from the prosecutors as to why that would be a bad idea, I'm not going to object to the language, and that them not being here obviates my need to do that, Mr. Chair.
Okay, someone said that they thought, I think Senator Dietzig said that she thought she saw the advocate, Ms. Haas, for the county attorney, so maybe we can wait and revisit another issue here just so she has the opportunity if she wants it to. There she is. Ms. Haas, we're putting you on the spot here, but good morning. If you could just state your name for the record.
Nancy Haas with Messerly and Kramer on behalf of the County Attorneys Association.
Thank you, Ms. Haas. We were just talking and Representative Lesch was talking. And Representative Lesch, could you just repeat what you just said? We're talking about the language in the bill in two sections of the side-by-side on the Senate language, sections 20 and 34, which in sum and substance, which would allow public defenders access to certain data in a way that they don't have it before. My understanding, well, Representative Lesch, being a prosecutor, can maybe describe it more fully, but he had some questions about the opposition, the apparent opposition by the county attorneys.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Haas, why, as a prosecutor, is it a good idea for me to screen requests like this for discovery from a defense attorney when they're just going to get them anyway through the discovery process?
Well, Mr. Chair and conference committee members, I'm not sure that, given that I'm not a practitioner in this field, I think what I can tell you about this section and how the County Attorneys Association feels is we are opposed to it. We don't see the need, but we see problems that could come about as a result of asking for this information. It's about how much I can tell you today. If you want more information, like what happens in court from our prosecutor's perspective, I'd be happy to find someone to come and share that with you.
Well, thank you, Ms. Haas. Mr. Chair, I could wildly speculate as to the reasons, as I did in our little huddle yesterday, but I'm not sure that my speculations would be correct. So without that, I'm not going to object to the provision, Mr. Chair, because I just don't understand why it is an issue.
Okay. Is there anyone else here who wishes to be heard on these provisions? We might have to just delay action on this for a little bit, but I know, Mr. Sikora, we heard from you yesterday. Is there anyone else who has not been heard who wishes to be heard on sections 20 and 34 of the Senate language, which again would provide public defenders with certain data? Okay. I think for now we might want to just put that on the shelf unless someone has a motion here.
Mr. Chair, maybe we could delay, but I think this is kind of the time to make the call.
Okay. Do you have a motion?
Yeah, I would make the motion to include the Senate language on that.
Okay. Representative Lesch has moved adoption of Senate sections 20 and 34. Discussion. Any discussion from members? Okay. Seeing no discussion, all in favor of adoption of the Senate language in sections 20 and 34 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Language is adopted. Another issue that is on the list, one of the more high-profile one, has to do with Senator Marty's language. In the Senate, obviously, this doesn't appear in the House. This is, I forget which part of the side-by-side this is. It's at the very end. Okay, R30, that's right. So we heard some testimony yesterday, and this consists of two sections, Senate language, sections 36 and 37. The first section is postponement of the destruction of data from November of 2013 to June of 2014, and then section 37 of the Senate language is the newborn screening program study. I will just say that having conferred yesterday, the House conferees have no objection. I think we're united in not objecting to section 37. The study seems eminently reasonable to us, so I will move adoption of section 37 of the Senate language on page R31. Discussion from members.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Lass.
Can section 37 stand on its own?
Senator Lass, my understanding is it can. I spoke yesterday, and I don't think he'd mind me saying that we spoke to Mr. Koppel from the Department of Health, and I think the department believes it could stand on its own. I'm seeing nods, affirmative nods from Mr. Koppel. Further discussion on adoption of section 37. Okay, seeing no further discussion, all in favor of adopting section 37 of the Senate language, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails and the language is adopted. I will tell you that on section 36, it's a different story. I think at least the House conferees are not prepared to adopt section 36. And I know there are some advocates perhaps in the room yet from yesterday who want that, but for a lot of reasons we can go into, it doesn't seem to us the right time to do that, and we're worried about the perception at least that this would be sort of going back on an understanding or deal that was reached with respect to the destruction of this data. So there's no motion pending obviously, but at least I think I can speak for the House conferees that we're not prepared to adopt that language in section 36, but certainly willing to entertain discussion if anyone has anything to say about section 36. Senator Lass.
Mr. Chairman, when would the House conferees believe the appropriate time is to adopt such a section? If we don't adopt it this legislative session now, then a lot of very valuable health data will be destroyed. It's now or never. So when do you recommend that we approach this?
Well, Senator Letts and other House conferees can speak for themselves, but my understanding is if the choice is now or never, then the answer would be never. So the Supreme Court case, which I don't have in front of me, but certainly said or implied that by the end of 2013, it ought to be destroyed. And so this would be giving sort of a reprieve for that. My understanding, and I don't want to speak for the department, but is that the department has at least planned for that possibility. And my further understanding, and I'm ready to be corrected, I'm looking at Mr. Koppel, is that the department is neutral on this. The department is neither for nor against the provision in Section 36. But Mr. Koppel, I don't want to put words in your mouth.
Mr. Chair.
Is Senator there a, Rosen.
Oh, thank you. I was just going to ask for the department to come speak.
Sure. Mr. Koppel, as to Section 36, could you just enunciate the department's position?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, first I want to clarify something that I think we keep overlapping between the case, the court decision, and the legislation. The court decision instructed us to destroy all data as well as blood spots prior to November 16th of 2011. That is a court decision, not impacted, by the way, by this legislation. This legislation, or this amendment that you're discussing, is to delay the destruction as planned under the newborn screening legislation we passed last year, which would begin the destruction of data 2 years from collection. So beginning November 16th of 2011, that two-year clock started ticking, and that time is up November of this year. So just to be clear, it will not preserve the data from the court decision. This is about the data from November of 2013 to June 1st of 2014. The department is neutral on this amendment, but I just wanted the committee to understand what data you were discussing. it is our intention with the section that you just agreed to come back next year with a methodology to collect and store both blood spots and data under the newborn screening statute as passed, as is in current law.
Thank you. Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Koppel, if this language fails to make it in the conference committee report, what we're talking about is not the therefore resultant destruction of 30-year-old data. That's already going to happen. We're talking about the destruction of 2-year-old data. Is that right?
Mr. Koppel.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, that is correct. The data will be destroyed every month beginning in November. So it would be November of 2011 data would begin to be destroyed in November of 2013, and then up every subsequent month, going back 2 years, that set of data is destroyed. As soon as we have a collect and storage policy, which we would bring back next year, and hopefully it would be enacted and we begin that process, we would begin saving both blood spots and data, which we're very much looking forward to.
Representative Lesh.
Well, Mr. Chair, and I've puzzled over this over the course of the past probably 48 hours, and I had a good long conversation with my Senator John Marty last night. Read the court decision in its totality, and I had snippets of it, but not the entire decision, so I read that. It seems that a lot of people fall either on one side or the other of this issue, and I find myself squarely in the middle, but I do come down on the side that the chair suggested. And this information from Mr. Koppel, I think, buttresses the position I've come to even more, which is that the time should not be extended and the provision should not be included, also because of the fact that we're not talking about saving really old data, which the medical community really wants, but by the same token, folks are concerned about its usage for reasons that we can't even speculate at this point. So I am with the chair in this position, Mr. Chair.
Senator Dietzen.
I have a question and comment. So I understand that it's the 2 years. Was it the legislature that set the 2 years as part of the 2012 thing? And then my follow-up question is, so if I'm a parent, I understand there's a lot of parents and people that are concerned about and think the data should be destroyed, but and there's a provision in here that in this paragraph, section 36, that allows them to contact the health department and say, please destroy, but there's nothing in here, and what if I'm a parent right now and I do want to save that data because for whatever reason I do want to have that in case as research and stuff changes. There are maybe positives also for having that. I know there's a lot of concerns about what may happen with that data and what, you know, some of the bad things we do, but there's also potentially good stuff of having that data. And I think we've had doctors language and testify on some of the good stuff. But if you're a parent, my understanding is if I want to keep that, there's nothing I can do. So there's kind of two questions. Like, you set that 2 years, and was it an arbitrary date? And then again, what do you do if you want to keep that data?
Mr. Koppel.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dietzen, that is practically speaking correct. It is possible to contact a department, have your blood spot or data sent to your doctor, and therefore you would have it. But that's really the only alternative at this point. It's not a good spot we're in. I don't disagree with that at all, and that's why we're very, very anxious to launch a full effort in the collection and storage. I don't want to de-emphasize the data being destroyed month by month or blood spots. That's how we went from one test to over 55 tests today that save babies' lives. It's through research. So I don't want to de-emphasize that and how important that is and how important it is to us. But the biggest
thing we can do is set up a system to do that, and I want to emphasize that part as much as anything. And in the long term, that's what's important.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Koppel, I would assume that the June 1st date was picked because you would like to work on this next session to get this straightened out as far as the collection of the data. You need to have, you're going to be destroying these samples of November, and 2 years of samples are going to be gone. So June 1st was just picked to make sure that you can get this narrowed down next year. I would assume that's correct. Is that correct?
Mr. Koppel.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rosen, actually the reason, the rationale for the amendment was to give time to come, if the department came back with a study, as I understand what Senator Marty wanted to accomplish, that the data would not be destroyed right away. I do want to make it clear, the data is destroyed each month. So it isn't 7 months worth of data. If, you know, it's certainly, regardless of what you decide on this issue, when we come back next year with with what we would suggest is a way to collect and store data, and this the various committees will hear this in both the House and the Senate, that we move as quickly as possible to set that up and approve it, because it's not going to be cheap. I'm not talking about tens of millions of dollars, but to save everything is cheap. To destroy everything is cheap. To be in the middle is more expensive. In other words, you're sorting through the process of who approves and who doesn't. And that takes, that's more labor intensive and more interactive with each of the parents. So it's just a more expensive process. But I think the answer to your question is each month after November 30th, 1 month of data from 2 years previous will be destroyed, which is 1/12 of the babies born in any particular year.
I see.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And something that we haven't brought up around this table is the opt-in, opt-out option, and I would assume that's a more problematic for the House than, and you haven't mentioned that. So is it the collection of the data and the delay of the collection that is the problem, or the opt-in, opt-out on lines 31.1?
Well, Mr. Chair, for my purposes, Senator Rosen, it is the collection primarily. So sifting into getting into the weeds of picking, I mean, of course, the question is, as relayed by the Minnesota Supreme Court, is the question of whether they had previous authorized express permission. So that is a form of opt-out, if you will. But for me, it is the collection question, your first one.
Senator Rosen.
I guess I'm just confused about then just, as Mr. Koppel said, there is just another 7 months of collection. I guess I don't understand the problem with this section. I'm sorry, if that's the problem of 7 months delay on the... Well, the collection, I don't really understand what the problem is.
Mr. Chair, and my understanding, and maybe if someone wants to clarify this, is that the proposal puts us 7 months out past the prohibition under federal law. I was focusing on a kind of a different matter yesterday. So someone testified as to the 24 months under federal law. Maybe I missed it, but... If I'm going to be disabused on that notion today, that would be helpful. But I think it is, that is the question. And also, now we have a letter today from an attorney from Farish Johnson who says that's the issue as well, that all of a sudden we risk increased litigation. So if someone can disabuse me of that notion,
Mr. Koppel.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lesh, I believe this is the situation. The court case is of November 16, 2011. The way the Supreme Court ruled was, if we did not have express authority that is law, or permission from the parent, we should not have been collecting and storing the information we did prior to that date. Following that date, and what we passed in 2012, we passed express authority for the newborn screening program. In other words, we gave permission and express authority to run the program, and the part of the that was not addressed in the legislation was how we would move forward with how we collect and store. One thing was made clear, that we would have an opt-in for collection and storage. So when we do set up the system, it has to be an opt-in system, meaning the parents must affirmatively say, yes, keep the blood spot, keep the data. I give you that permission. If we don't have that permission, the blood spot is destroyed after 71 days, and the data is destroyed after 2 years. The federal law you refer to mandates that we keep the data for 2 years. It isn't a maximum, it's a minimum. That's the lab, the CLIA lab rule. So there isn't a dispute over federal conflict or court conflict. As long as we have express authority, you grant express authority for a program, the Supreme Court's ruling was that's what you need, or consent. In this case, we did both. Last year when we passed newborn screening, you gave express authority for the program to operate, for us to calibrate our machinery with blood spots, numerous things. And you said if we're going to collect data and blood spots, we need consent to do so. That's what passed last year.
So then this sentence and this letter signed by Attorney Scott Kelly. Is Scott Kelly here by chance? Okay, well, we just got a letter from him that says the proposed legislation is preempted by federal statute. Federal statute provides for the destruction of all test results within 24 months. Proposed legislation begs further losses and claims against the state and Minnesota Department of Health. So, Mr. Koppel, do we have a letter from an attorney on our table, from an attorney who just doesn't know the law?
Mr. Koppel.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lesch, I am not aware of any federal law that prohibits the storage and use of data beyond 24 months. The only law I'm familiar with is CLIA, which I can't tell you what the acronym stands for, but it's the lab, the L is lab, I believe, in CLIA. But that is basically says we need to keep the data for at least 24 months. That's why we chose 24 months in the newborn screening statute.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Koppel, I'm not calling your knowledge into question. We certainly have had handouts on multiple occasions from attorneys who don't know the law. This wouldn't be the first time. And I'm not saying that certainly is the case here, but it may be. However, the case law, I think, cites a different provision of federal statute other than the CLIA that you cited. So, Mr. Chair, in light of that, I'm still not comfortable, and also in light of the fact the relatively small percentage, sliver of samples we're talking about cutting off by the refusal to include the Senate language, I'm just made further comfortable by the fact that it's not going to be a terrible problem for the scientists who want to evaluate this.
Senator Letts.
Mr. Chairman, like Senator Rosen, I'm perplexed at the concern over a seven-month extension. We've got the Minnesota Medical Association and the American Academy of Pediatrics Minnesota chapter telling us that the retention of this data is a significant health matter. We're talking about 6.5 or 7 months. I mean, what possibly can be the major problem with extending the destruction deadline so that we can have a study completed? I just don't get it. I mean, first of all, I'm a little reluctant to move anything further without the Senate author of this provision in the room. We've had a discussion now for I don't know how long. He's apparently in another committee meeting and has notified us that he'll be here shortly. I mean, it would have been good to have him hear all of this so he could be in a position to respond. But secondly, my recollection from his testimony on this is that the 24 months that was in the court case was an agreement of the parties that the court memorialized in a consent order. And that the parties are now basically saying, or at least one of the parties, I'm not sure exactly, it would be nice to have Senator Marty here to answer this question, they ought to have another several months to figure out exactly what's appropriate to retain and what isn't, and under what circumstances. The problem is you cross this Rubicon line and there's no going back. And what data is destroyed is destroyed, and you can't recover it, even if you decide later it was really, really valuable data to have. And there are protocols that can be put into place to meet other people's concerns. I mean, how do you justify that if, in hindsight, we get a report next February that says, boy, we really wish we had that data, but it's gone, sorry.
A couple things before I call on Representative Scott, just a game plan. I know some people were here at the very beginning. The House goes into session at 9, and I know there are people here who want to testify on this and other issues. I'd like to get in testimony in the next 17 minutes. I'll call on Representative Scott from those who might not be able to be here later in the day or at a subsequent meeting. Just a little roadmap. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, my issue here is that we have both the courts and the legislature. We passed a bill last session saying after 2 years. And with the courts and the legislature saying that this data needs to be destroyed, and so I believe that we need to adhere to that. And I think that's all. I'll leave it at that, and we'll let the testimony go ahead.
So at this point, I don't know if we're going to completely resolve this, and I do want to give Senator Marty a chance at this or at a subsequent meeting to testify. We owe him that respect, and he just can't be here at this minute. So what I'd like to do, and I know this is a little case of whiplash here, but I think to accommodate everyone, let's move on to another issue. My understanding is that there's some people who want to testify on at least two issues here. One is the St. Paul Crime Lab issue. I understand there's some folks who want to talk about that. And then Mr. Neumeister informed me, oh, there he is, I didn't see him, that Mr. Anfinson is here to revisit the language that we adopted yesterday with respect to Section 1. This was the email listserv kind of issue. So in the interest of time and knowing we have about 15 minutes left, let me just ask for a show of hands. In terms of, is there anyone here to test? Who is here, if anyone, to testify on the crime lab issue? Okay. I see a couple people. Who is here to testify, other than Mr. Anfinson, on Section 1? Mr. Neumeister. Okay. What I'd like to do is quickly, because Mr. Anfinson might not be able to be here, hear his testimony. Mr. Neumeister, I know you may be able to be here, so you're lower on the priority list only because you may be here for subsequent meetings. Mr. Anfinson, you wish to be here.
I could return, Mr. Chair, if that's convenient.
Well, if you can speak for just a couple minutes about your concerns or questions, I think that would be appropriate now, and then we'll move on to others who want to testify on the other issue.
I would be happy. I'll be brief.
Just identify yourself for the record.
Yeah, Mark Anfinson. Good morning, members, Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, attorney for the Minnesota Newspaper Association. I don't have to say much because the topic of my comments is so brief. This is Section 1 of the bill. The line 1.23 language that you apparently discussed yesterday. I was indisposed. I had to be over at our friends at the Supreme Court talking about a data practices issue yesterday morning. We don't have a problem with the notion that email lists, listservs, and things like that collected by governmental bodies should be restricted to some extent in terms of public access. We don't think that there's a compelling or even substantial public interest in public access to the big lists that government bodies maintain. Our concern is focused on the single phrase that follows for notification, and then it says, or informational purposes. It's the or informational purposes language. It continues to concern us. We've talked to the author. She's been very cooperative. The League of Cities folks have been very helpful in discussing this, and I compliment them for that. But 35 or so years of experience with the Data Practices Act shows one thing very graphically, and that is any language in a statute, a data privacy, data practices statute, that is not relatively precise lends itself to mischief over time. And so, to the extent we can't always do that in every context, but to the extent it's possible, if you can be as precise as the language allows when you're focused on a particular concern or a particular issue, it's going to produce very significant dividends down the road. And I think for notification purposes, is reasonably clear in terms of the limits of the English language. I don't think for informational purposes is. That could mean many, many different things. And it could be played with. And I'm not sure the case for expanding the law that widely is yet been made. Maybe we could do that later. But I that's all I have to say, Mr. Chair.
Before I call on Representative Scott, just I think Senator Rosen yesterday, I think, went a long way towards, I mean, she sort of got us to the consensus that we arrived at with her amendment to take out certain words. I would only add that last language does sort of minimize the possibility of the mischief you talked about, because it says as requested by the individual. So it's not just any informational purpose, it's the informational purpose as requested by the individual, which at least seemed to give this committee comfort. But Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering if you could give us some specific examples of what that mischief could be in this case.
Mr. Chair, Representative Scott, you're kidding me. You want to get specific and practical here? I mean, this is a data practice. No, it's a very legitimate question. The concern I would have specifically is in the context of communications from government over issues that government officials are concerned about. If you're notifying people of a specific snow emergency, for example, that's fairly clear. But when you want to tell people information about what? School bond issue, referendum, and you can withhold public access to the folks you're contacting for purposes of promoting a particular message or an issue, I think that does become potentially problematic. If I then come forward and say I'd like to determine who you have been contacting using government resources for a particular purpose, and the response I'll get, well, we contacted them for informational purposes, so you don't get to know that. I want to be clear, I don't think this is a huge issue. This isn't a giant concern. It's just part of part of this, what I think has become a real priority for all these types of deliberations, which is make the law as clear as we can, because we now see the ramifications of not doing that. And informational purposes is a pretty squishy phrase. What does that mean? You'd ask 10 people, you'd get at least 8 different answers. So,
thank you, Mr. Amundson. Appreciate
your
time. And members, as we're just trying to cram stuff in before 9, and I know this meeting will be used at 9:15 by the House Rules Committee, and the House goes in at 9. I'm hoping why don't we shift to another issue here, because I want to pay respect to testifiers who might not be able to be here. Let's shift briefly to the St. Paul Crime Lab issue, because I know there are testifiers who might not be here in the future. Mr. Franklin, I know you and perhaps others wanted to be heard on that issue, and we might just have to take these on a rolling basis, and I apologize for the whiplash, members, but I want to be respectful to those who might not be able to be here at subsequent hearings who have been patiently waiting. Mr. Franklin, you wish to be heard on the issue of the St. Paul Crime Lab?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Jim Franklin, Executive Director with the Minnesota Sheriff's Association. We do support the accreditation lab program and the legislation as introduced currently. I'll end my testimony there.
Okay. All right.
And Mr. Chair, Dave Dietrich, the Executive Director for the Minnesota Chiefs of Police Association. We, too, were involved with the negotiation of this language, and we are supportive of it.
Okay. Well, that was easy. Anyone else who wishes to be heard in the audience on that issue, the St. Paul Crime Lab? Okay. One more.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Letts.
Just to be clear, the issue is not the St. Paul Crime Lab. The issue is accreditation of forensic labs across the state.
That's That's the more precise issue. Point well taken. It's come up in the context, obviously, of the St. Paul Crime Lab. I shouldn't refer to it as that. The Crime Lab accreditation issue.
Mr. Chairman and members, good morning. My name is Jared Jordahl, Government Affairs with the Department of Public Safety, and the department does support the Senate language. The governor is on record supporting accreditation of forensic laboratories. We think this is a good way to accomplish it. Accreditation is actually accomplished by outside groups that accredit labs, and they certify that the accreditation has been met through paperwork, and the language says that DPS would sort of keep that paperwork on file and have it available on a website for members of the criminal justice community to assess whether a given lab is accredited. We think that we are an appropriate repository for such records and to a place to make them available, and we think that this is a good and low-cost option to achieve accreditation, which is, I think, in the best interests of the criminal justice system.
Okay. Member comments, questions? Okay. Thank you. Appreciate it. All right. Members, just to sort of crystallize some of the issues, at least as I see them, but I'm ready to be corrected. In terms of kind of the remaining issues to discuss. One is, to the extent there's more testimony on the crime lab accreditation issue, I don't think we're going to solve that in 8 minutes. Another issue had to do with Senate Section 27, which we discussed yesterday, and I know Ms. Engler perhaps had something to say about that. The issue, if you recall, members, was, and I believe this was a Senator Limmer amendment that came up on the floor of the Senate, and the question, at least according to my notes, was how this language might impact the courts and particular Native American tribes. And Ms. Engler, I don't know if you're prepared to discuss that now or whether you'd wish to wait to a subsequent meeting. Looks like you are. Ms. Engler, just introduce yourself for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. Katie Engler with the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. Certainly the language, as I explained yesterday, does affect the courts. They are excluded from Chapter 13 in Section 13.90. I think there is a fix that we discussed yesterday to address their issue. The question is whether or not the federal criminal justice agencies who are on the secure network at the BCA would be able to comply with Chapter 13 or whether they would be obligated to follow federal law. We also have two Indian tribes in Minnesota who are not subject to Chapter 13, and whether or not they would agree to be subject is an issue of their sovereignty.
Okay, so Ms. Engler, as I understand it, the language that you sort of suggested to us yesterday, which would, I'm paraphrasing here, but it would reference the court rules, that seems like a relatively easy fix. I have not heard, and I don't know if any members have heard from any of the tribal communities about any concerns, and maybe we'll have to be more proactive about that. Again, I don't know if we can solve that in now about 6 minutes. But we probably want to do that before we decide to adopt this. You've very helpfully offered us the court fix. I don't know to what extent. The fact that we haven't heard from any tribes leads me to believe maybe it isn't. Maybe crucial. Senator Dietzer.
Thank you. I did leave messages for... Okay. And do you know which tribes? I called a bunch of different people, and I know they were checking. I did not hear back yet. Do you know which two tribes?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dietzick, there are several statutory provisions, and I apologize, I didn't bring the citations with me, that say that if what are called Public Law 280 tribes in Minnesota wish to have law enforcement agencies, they must agree to follow Chapter 13. That covers all of the tribes in Minnesota, but for the Red Lake and Boys Fort bands. They are the only two non-public law 280 tribes in this state. So it would be those two tribes that would be affected because the others are covered by these statutory provisions. So if that helps.
That helps.
That's very helpful. Thank you, Ms. Engler. I think that narrows it. Okay, so we've got that issue yet to discuss about whether to adopt and in what form. We've got the crime lab Prime Lab accreditation. We've got a tweak to the MnDOT language. We adopted the amendment that Ms. Pontius and Mr. Gehring had crafted, but it sounds like in order to adopt the other language that we discussed, some tweaking might have to be done. So that's another outstanding issue. Another issue that we haven't discussed today yet is the driver's license data issue. I think this was a Senator Westrum amendment having to do with the circumstances under which members of the public would allow their data to be used or others to access it, I suppose. That's another one that we're not going to solve in now about 4 minutes. And those, at least on my list, are the remaining issues. But, of course, there may be others. The Senator Dean's here. Oh, of course. And then the Senator Marty's issue as well, of course. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Engler addressed an issue with the federal, the issue that we're just talking with her along with the tribes, but she also addressed the fact that she didn't know if some of the federal agencies that use the BCA database would be able to conform to Chapter 13, and we didn't really address that. So.
Ms. Engler, could you briefly expand on that? And then that's probably all we have time for until our next meeting.
Mr. Chair, Representative Scott. Federal agencies are subject to the Federal Freedom of Information Act and the Federal Privacy Act, and so I suspect that particularly the Freedom of Information Act is as protective of criminal justice data as the Data Practices Act is with respect to that data, and the Federal Privacy Act is the federal law that gives subjects of data methodology to access the data held by the federal government. So I think there are parallel federal provisions that cover what Chapter 13 addresses. And if I might, Mr. Chair, make one final point that I forgot earlier. There are two pieces of language that are at issue here. The second is with respect to non-criminal justice agencies who, by definition, have to be a Minnesota agency in order to be on the secure network. So telling them that they are subject to Chapter 13, they already are. So to be honest, that language is redundant.
Which is good to know, actually. That means we don't have to do anything. Members, again, sorry for the abbreviated committee hearing today. The House is, as you know, changed. It was going to go in at 10, then it was changed to 9. I think the best thing to do is to recess to the call of the chair. I don't know whether, and Senator Dinsick and I were just quietly conferring about whether we'll be able to meet again today. Hopefully, yes. But as you know, at this point in the session, it's tough to say. So I guess everyone should just stay tuned, and thanks for your time and your patience as we do the whiplash from issue to issue, but I think we've narrowed the issue to just really a handful now of some tweaking, and we're almost there. So this committee stands in recess.